All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. In a row for the Word Bros. It's up to that.
I mean, it's hard to have two weeks worth of episodes in a row, especially with what's going on out there in the world.
Don't call it a comeback.
We've been here for years.
Yes. We have a very special guest today, Jason McNamara. You're going to listen to this conversation and you are going to want to make comic books. You're going to want to sit down at your laptop or your desktop or your typewriter or your pen and
pencil.
Yes. And you are going to want to write comic books because it is an inspiring conversation. Jason is a very interesting dude. He's got a book right now that you can pick up on Indiegogo. It's called, Kevin, what's that book called?
Nocturnal Commissions.
It looks really great.
It's an awesome book. Backed it on Kickstarter, and I think you should back it too. Go to Indiegogo, grab it. Listen to Jason, you'll be like set to make some comics. You'll learn something today on Word Bros, which we can rarely ever say we're educational, but today we are.
If anything, we're detracting from your education. So any education that you've gotten is slowly dwindling away from listening to our stupid voices. But hey, listen for an hour and learn something. This is our friend, our good guy, Jason McNamara, here on Word Bros. He recorded his Kickstarter video in front of his bookshelf with all of his books on there. And I love how anytime we speak to an author, they're sitting in front of a bookshelf. It's like they have to do it. It's like they just feel the need to sit in front of, like, look at all the things I've read.
I'm
so learned. I know everything.
I am prolific.
Yes.
I got these one at IKEA when I had a sale.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I just put them up. I don't know what they're about.
That's awesome.
Yeah, people don't read. There's props.
I think it's part of the problem, though, with this industry that we're all in, is people don't read.
No, they don't.
not enough people read. So I'm already recording because I like to hot record, just so you know, Jason.
Record is an industry term?
I just like to jump right in, man. I just like to get right in. Because nice. We've had people on the guest where we're like, okay, let's go. And the pre-conversation has been really good. And then we say, okay, let's start. They get all clammy and nervous. So sometimes I just like to just keep it rolling just to see how we go.
You just go right into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should be more nervous.
Why?
I don't know. I'm always afraid I'm going to say something stupid. I mean, I will say something stupid. Let me put it that way. Let's get to the stupid stuff.
Well, to be fair, there are degrees of stupid. There's like silly stupid and there's like hurtful stupid. As long as you're silly stupid, we're fine.
Oh, right on. Okay. You know? Can I just say you have an excellent voice for this, by the way?
Thank you. I used to do radio back in the day. It's just natural thing.
Well, I feel like I'm in good hands.
You'll be great. Yeah,
you
Jason.
Are.
Be great.
Yes.
And so let me know when we're gonna start.
We've already started.
Okay.
Yes.
We're good. We're going. We're just gonna do this.
Say the whatever first, stupid things now.
Yes. The first thing I want to ask is, you teach comics, like writing comics, right? Like that's
I do. Yeah, I'm an educator.
That's awesome. So tell us, what are Kevin and I doing wrong? Why are we getting anywhere?
Like everything. That's what he's going to say.
What are we doing wrong? We all should have joined the fire department as teenagers, because then we could have been like retired by now. That's what you did wrong.
All right.
We didn't join a union right away.
So you're saying my mistakes were made early.
Yeah. So our mistakes were probably, I got a comic book. My father taught me to read with comic books.
Same.
So, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that motherfucker's fault. We had bad parents. Like, we never had a chance. Like, if I have a kid, I'm going to give him like a crack pipe and be like, you want a shot in life, but don't don't ever let me fucking catch you with a comic book, you little shit.
It's bad news. It's yeah. I have two kids. They both read comics because much like your dad and Kevin's parents, I got my kid. It's sneaky literacy, you know?
It is.
So, yeah.
That's too bad, man. You seem like somebody who might love his kids.
I do. They're really nice. They're good people. Yeah.
They're good people. How old are they?
A 7 and 9.
7 and 9. Right on. Yeah. What do they read?
My daughter is 9. She reads all of the Raina Telmeyer and associated books with that. Like, we started out with like Peanut stuff, and we still read Peanuts, like the old strips, but like the Peanut comics that Boom did a couple years ago, we started out with that. We started out with like the superhero friends, like the girls, that girls line they had for a while, that superhero high or whatever that DC was doing.
Sure.
We read that for a stretch, but she kind of fell into a groove of like the Raina Telmeyer kind of umbrella of books.
Yeah, all the stuff I don't read.
It's, you know what?
That
it's,
sells millions of copies.
It's really good stuff. Sometimes the lettering in the books, if I don't want to sound like one of those guys, but sometimes the lettering in the books leaves things to be desired. And right. I've noticed that a lot of the books, they kind of fall under the same category. It's two friends going to middle school, friends grow apart, and what happens then? Uh-huh. Does that make sense? Like, it's like very much coming of age kind of. This was my best friend since kindergarten. And now we're going to junior high and she likes fashion and I like this. Yeah. And we're not friends anymore. And how do we deal with that? Like, it's a lot of the stuff she reads is kind of derivative of that, but it's still well done. Right. You know,
I don't have any nostalgia for that era of my life. Like, when I stop being friends with someone, they're just dead to me.
Really?
Like, right. They're just gone.
Okay.
Like, whatever happened to that guy? Like, oh, I remember he liked Aerosmith and I didn't. So I've never spoken to him since 1987.
That was
Does he have a family? Who cares? He's dead to me.
It's weird that you would mention that because my wife is a big Aerosmith fan.
Oh, man.
And I know. And I remember her telling me that on like our second or third date. And I was like, Aerosmith sucks. Like, they're not good at all. But we were able to bridge that gap and continue on.
Was Don't Want to Miss a Thing your wedding song?
Yes, that was exactly it. It was, I wore a space suit and everything. It was really awesome.
Man. Well, love finds a way, man, despite our humongous differences in life, cultural and personal.
Now, why don't you like Aerosmith?
Because I have two ears? Because I have self-esteem? Because they're garbage? Because it's butt rock? I mean, Dream On is a listenable song because it doesn't sound like Aerosmith.
No, his voice sounds so much different on that song.
Yeah. It's like that one Bob Dylan album where he sounds like a guy who can sing.
Are you talking about the country record?
No, like Lay Lady Lay.
Yeah, that's the Nashville Skyline.
Or Blood on the Tracks or whatever one where he stops smoking and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this guy's so smooth.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I like Dylan.
You can't say anything too much, Bob. I mean, you like Neil Diamond.
So. I love Neil Diamond.
See? Neil Diamond's a great songwriter.
Thank you. He's he's the Jewish Elvis. Like, that guy's the best.
I don't hate Neil Diamond. I don't hate him. I just don't want, I mean, I could take it or leave it. That's one of those things. Like, you guys have bands that you could take or leave. You just don't care.
Right. It's innocuous.
Yeah, I have no feeling.
Can we all agree Dave Matthews is fucking the worst?
Yeah. No.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Then we're all friends here.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Dave Matthews sucks.
Yeah. He can unite anybody.
Yeah.
That yodeling fuck. So my wife and her friends, they love Dave Matthews.
See, you have one too.
We make it work. I just don't bring it up a lot. It's just one of those things you learn to live with. But he will play the Gorge for like 3 or 4 days in a row, and they're like, look. We know you don't want to go, but we have to extend an invitation because you're married into the family. And I'm like, that is really sweet. Do I want to spend 3 or 4 days on mushrooms listening to that fuck yodel? I would rather jam a hot poker in my eye.
Okay.
So the answer is, thank you for inviting me. The answer is no.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, not only that, but it's fuck no.
He's from here, like where Bob is, and I. Well, not here, like Charlottesville.
He's from Charlottesville, Virginia. Well, he's actually from South Africa, but he lived in Charlottesville.
That's why he started Dave Matthews Band.
He sucks. I'm not gonna. Yeah, he's awful. I'll tell you this now. How do you feel about James Taylor?
innocuous. It's all like right. super vanilla. Yeah. It's like no flavor at all. It means nothing to me. I have no opinion because it's not a real thing.
I hate James Taylor. And when I worked
Jimmy Buffett.
Hang on. I have a good James Taylor story. I don't think I've ever told you this one, Kevin. When I worked in radio, I got tickets because my wife is a big James Taylor fan. Because it's music her dad listened to, so it's got a deeper meaning for her. When I worked in radio, I got her tickets to see James Taylor. And she was like, are you going to come with me? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll go. And so I was gung-ho to go with her to be a good husband until like 3 days before the show. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I don't want to go.
I was like, go on Tinder, find a date. I'm busy.
I was like, why don't you go with your dad or something? You guys will enjoy it. I was like, because I'm not going to have fun. So I didn't go to James Taylor with her. That's the kind of husband I am.
Dude, that's the kind of husband I am. You guys have fun. I'll see you in 4 days. Hey, so let me know when we start, and we can start talking about teaching comics.
Well, teach us. Teach us what you know, man.
We are here to learn. We are here to learn from you. We are Padawan learners in your hands.
Then you are supremely fucked, my friends.
How did you get a gig teaching comics? That's what I was going to ask.
I know the answer to that one. So my wife runs a department at Pacific Northwest College of Art.
No, thumbs up nepotism. All right.
Yeah. So she, but no, let me tell you. So she runs the continuing education department, which has nothing to do with where I work, the department I work in. But she was in a meeting, and the department, the writing head of the said, you know, we really need someone to teach comics. My wife was like, you know, that's literally the only thing my husband is good at. Like, that's his only skill in life. Really? He's a failure at all other areas. So I met with the department head, and we hit it off. And I thought, you know, I don't really want to teach. I don't really want to work at all. But I thought, okay, I'll do it for a semester because I need the income and I'll make my wife happy. And then I learned that I actually really enjoy it.
Okay.
So I don't have kids. And I thought, oh, man, I don't want to be around young people. That's terrible. But I actually, like, I have a Socratic approach where we have a dialogue and I'm learning from them as much as they're learning from me.
All right. Is that a creative way to say you're stealing their ideas?
No, because I don't really understand their ideas because we're all from different worlds. When I talk about my frame of reference, you know, I'm always talking about like how a good theme can elevate a dodgy premise. And I always give Jaws as the example. And no one in the room has seen Jaws.
Get the fuck out of here. Really?
No, really?
This generation hasn't watched Jaws, man.
No, they want to talk about Steven's Universe and Adventure Time. And I'm like, okay, tell me why. Tell me why that fits to the three-act structure. Tell me why that theme elevates it. And then we have this dialogue, and I'm not just talking at them. I want to talk with them. So having a good teacher, I was ready to, if I could share.
Sure.
When I was 15, I was counting the days until I could drop out of high school. I hated high school. I hated everybody in the high school. I just wanted to go and be a clam digger like my father. All right? That's how ambitious I was. And I met a teacher. His name was Bob Mondanero. He was a film and he changed my life. He brought me into his classroom. I needed something to do because I kept getting thrown out of all these other classes. So I would just hang out in the library all day and read. And they came in to take their pictures for their media cards. And I started new kids in the class. And he was like, oh, cool, you should take the class. You'll love it. We tell stories. We do this. And he was like, I grew up on Long Island, which is sort of conservative. And he was like this out gay guy who commuted from the city to Long Island, which is insane.
Yes, that's a nuts drive.
Yeah. If you're gay on Long Island, you get off the island. You don't commute in. And I thought he was really punk rock. He was really sort of rebellious and had his own way of just being like, he really impressed me. So I started taking his class and we just talked about story all day long. And then eventually he gave me the keys to the studio so I could edit my own films. And that teacher prevented me from dropping out of college. I mean, dropping out of high school. I would not have a high school diploma if it was not for that teacher. So then years later, I'm writing comic books and I did a book called First Moon and I dedicated it to him. And I was really excited to actually send him a copy. And then I found out he had passed away.
Oh, that's a bummer.
And I never got a chance to have that, you know, like, hey, you inspired me and took a little bit of time, but I found my footing and thank you for being a teacher and taking an interest in me. And I was a lot of work. He spent a lot of time that he didn't have to engaging with me to get me interested and to not drop out of high school. So that I could do a little bit of that at my age now where I'm in my 40s and I would normally have kids. That to me, like, I get to give back and hopefully I can have that, you know, exchange with someone else.
That's wonderful. That's awesome. A very touching story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow, what a, you're a man of many layers, Jason. Now, tell us about Nocturnal Commissions here. Tell us about this book.
How did that happen? How did you get Greg Hinkle, who worked on Airboy with
Robinson? That's a good get, dude.
That's awesome. So we did tell us how you awesomely pitched him this idea.
He pitched me. We had done The Rattler together before Airboy.
Okay.
And actually, at the end of The Rattler, James Robinson is in a hospital bed with a copy of Airboy next to him.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he was working on – I got him – we met in San Francisco, and he had graduated the Academy, and I think The Rattler was his first long-form book. He did the classic thing when you graduate college, you say yes to everything, and then nothing gets done. So The Rattler was slow going in the beginning, but when I started getting his pages in, I realized that my script needed to evolve and change because what he was delivering was so good. His artwork has its own sort of like soundtrack and mood. And so because he was so slow at the time, he's gotten a lot faster. I was sort of rewriting the script 10 pages ahead of him so I could constantly respond to whatever he was doing.
Interesting.
So that book, we were super proud of the book. It got a good response. I kickstarted it and then Image picked it up and they republished it.
Nice.
So we got paid twice, awesome. Which is not bad.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
But Greg and I have always stayed in touch and we've always wanted to work together. So he was on Black Cloud, that wrapped up. He did the Airboy. And then his schedule was open and he's like, I just want to do monsters. I want to do like a big, crazy, fun monster romp. And we were both so burnt out on these self-serious horror books. So really we had to talk about, we spent a weekend together at a convention and we just kept talking about like how we can make this unique in the marketplace and what's the theme of the book? Why do a monster book? What's the point of it? And at the time, and currently, we see the world is very, very fractured. And people are not getting along, and tribalism, and we're just further splintering to the point where nothing gets done. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could have a werewolf, a vampire, and a zombie come together as a unit, all sort of outcasts of their own community, as we all feel like outcasts, right? Everyone in comics feels this way. And if they could get along and join forces and make sort of peace with one another to do good, can't the rest of us?
Mm-hmm.
So that was how it came together. But it's, you know, it's the message is in the background. Really, it's a fun monster romp. Greg is the best illustrator on the planet.
Really?
He is. That is not a discussion that we're having. He is the best.
Now, how does he feel about you telling people that? Like, is he cool with that or no?
He's got a newborn. He doesn't know what I'm saying about
it. Okay, that's cool then.
Yeah, he has no idea.
You're exactly right.
He can care less.
Yeah.
He's not on social media very much. He is a quiet guy. He's a homebody. He's just a really, really sweet dude who loves comics and cartooning. And yeah, he really is. You've seen his work. Like, I'm so grateful and lucky that we get to work together. But we're also pals. So there's a fine balance. You know,
cool.
You don't want to overburden your friendships. Those are really important to me. And if I have to choose between a collaborator and a friend, I'll always take the friend.
So why Indiegogo? Because the book is like, you can still back the book on Indiegogo, yes? Like, it's still here. If I wanted a copy of this book, I could get one on Indiegogo, yes?
Absolutely, yeah. So okay. the first, we did a Kickstarter to publish it.
Okay.
Greg and I did the book on our own. One of my philosophies about Kickstarting is never Kickstart something that's not done. Because it's a wholly separate part of your brain that creates something and then markets something. And if someone asks you, where is the book? And you have totally blown it. You want to exceed people's expectations. We did the book on our own on weekends over the course of a year. And then we kickstarted it and found the money to print it and to ship it out to people.
Okay.
But I printed a couple extra 100 copies for conventions that no longer exist.
Well, currently, they'll be back.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but when
the separate like,
when are conventions coming back? I can't see that happening anytime soon. I think we're not even looking at like 2021. Like, who fucking knows when these things are going to come back?
And will there be demand for Nocturnal Commissions in 2023? I don't want to be the sole distributor of this. I don't want to be sitting on a gold mine of unsold copies. So the Indiegogo is for copies that exist or behind me right now.
Interesting. Okay.
But we did exclusives for the Kickstarter to make that sort of special. And then the regular cover is available through Indiegogo.
Interesting. So you're using Indiegogo as like a storefront, basically.
Yeah. It's the second platform. It's called an in-demand. And Indiegogo approached me about doing it.
Well.
Yes. They like money like anybody else.
Yeah, right?
So yeah, it works as a secondary chain. It's like a storefront, which is also what I did with Sucker, and which I'll do with the next book as well.
I'm writing this down. I never even thought about that because that's a really good idea. We're now, why notes. Now are you using like a traditional publisher for this book at all? Because it looks fantastic. You're just doing this all on your own. Like you're not
it's
gonna,
just me.
That's awesome. Now, why are you doing it that way? You have indie, you have Image cred, right? Why not just everybody I know has got a pipeline to Stevenson, bro? Why not just give it to Stevenson and see what happens?
I don't have a pipeline to Jack or shit.
Okay, all right.
So you would think I'd have better. I don't have any. This look, you could pitch it to a publisher and wait a year to get a yes or a no. And in that time, you could just do it yourself. So a couple of years ago, I made the decision that I was not going to hinge my career or my self-esteem or my sanity on people responding to emails. I could just do it myself. And if another publisher wants to come along and do this as a series, happy to have that conversation. But it's always better, in my opinion, to show a publisher what you did as opposed to what you would like to do.
Yes.
Right.
And the Rattler through Image is a great example because I'll tell you, we sent it to Image and they said no. And then we kickstarted it, and they said, and then Greg said, "Hey, would you guys like to do the Rattler?" And they said, "Sure, that looks great." What has changed? It's the same book, but you have shown that there's an audience for it. You went out, marketed it, and more importantly, you did it. No one has to hold my hand to show me how to publish a book. So I think the less needy you appear to a publisher, the more likely you will get a yes.
Yes.
Right? I don't have a great idea for a book. I've got a book. You know what I need? Your logo on it. That's it. And I'll step out of the way and let you do your thing.
And to be fair, I mean, sometimes the logo and the distribution is all they're really giving you because it's all on you to get do the legwork and make people buy this book, you know? Like,
you gotta find the artist anyway. When you're in indie comics, you have to start at the base and find someone to draw your book, you know? And in the beginning, that's the hardest part when you first start out. I would say, you know,
not finding an illustrator that will finish a project.
Ding, 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 ding.
and money that you can pay them. I pay all my illustrators, but you're not always going to find someone. Even money is not the motivator to finish a project. You have to write something for someone that they can be engaged with and be passionate about.
Now, let me ask you, now when you approach an art, now I guess Greg would be a different breed of cat because you guys are friends, but let's say you're perusing around on the interwebs and you find someone's art that you really dig, like how would you approach someone that you don't know about doing a book?
Well, you know, Greg has said no to projects. I've pitched some things that he's like, man, maybe not, maybe, you know, he's not just going to do it because we're friends. He's going to do it because he wants it. And I'm also writing it for him. Like I'm creating it for him.
Okay.
I did not have a werewolf zombie monster thing in my back pocket. So if I'm cruising around the webs, I usually want an introduction. It is hard to find people. I'm always looking for new people to work with.
Okay.
Right now I have a script that's done. It's a sci-fi horror script and I don't have an artist for it. And I'm looking for the right person. I'm always looking for an artist that has their own voice. Because if I wanted to find a Jim Lee knockoff, like you could swing a dead cat and you could find someone who worships Jim Lee. And Jim Lee is great, but I'm not getting Jim Lee and I don't want a Jim Lee clone. I want someone that can tell their own story and has their own style and voice. And you look at that work and you go, that is them.
Yes.
So Greg is wholly Greg Hinkle. Tony Talbert is wholly Tony Talbert. I'm working with Anka Gladnick on a project, and they are, like, I think they will have a tremendous career as a cover artist. Like a Bill Sienkiewicz type career as a cover artist.
Really?
Nice.
Blown away by their covers. Yeah, I'll show them to you. Your jaw will hit the floor.
That's awesome.
And they're grokking the interior stuff really, really quickly.
That's cool. That's very cool.
So who's unique? I want to find something that I want to look at and that has a voice of its own. And it's hard to find sometimes.
Interesting. Yeah,
right. But I'm always open to any people, any sort of collaborations. But I generally don't find someone online and approach them because it sounds creepy and weird. Like, hey, I like your work. Do you want to work on a project? It's such a personal relationship.
Yes.
And I want to know that they're going to finish a project. And I would rather just – I can just hang on to that script. I don't want to just give it to anybody.
Makes sense. Because Kevin and I are very much of the mindset that, like, much like you did with Greg, we like to write to the artist's kind of tastes because
– their talent.
A writer lives with the page for 45 minutes, maybe half an hour, could be 2 days. It could take a long time, but an artist is going to live with a page for a day or two. you know, they're going to live with a script for 30 days where you can write something in a week. So you kind of have to keep them interested and keep them motivated, if that makes sense. Like if, sure. If you've got a guy that doesn't want to draw horses and you're like, let's do a Western, then you're screwed. You know what I'm saying?
So an artist's time is infinitely more valuable than a writer's time. That's what it really is.
You're right.
One of the first things I tell the kids is don't assume that they just get your story and love it. You know, every panel, every page has to have a reason to exist. And you have to pull them into the emotional arc of your story, beat by beat. And don't assume that an artist doesn't read a script and experience a script the same way we do as consumers. Like we pick up a book and we read it front to back. An artist has to live with every little panel for days, weeks, maybe months at a time.
Yeah.
Is it interesting enough for them to stay on board? And sometimes the answer is no.
Yeah.
That's no matter awesome. How, money is not a motivator.
Yeah. That's good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. Because really, on the indie level, we can pay people more than, I don't want to badmouth any publishers, but there are publishers out there paying, you know, $70 a page.
I know.
Right. Yes, we found that out in a weird way. Yeah.
And I can top that on an indie level, but I will still have artists prefer to go that route because that's the way everyone goes to the industry.
Well, don't you think it's also because it's the clout of it? It's
like the having the publisher's name on the book, like we talked about earlier.
I feel the same way you do, but it's a lot of it is very much, oh, I've got a book at this publisher, I've got a book here, I've got a book there, as opposed to, oh, I'm working with Steve and he pays me more money, but at least I've got a book at so
we still have
publisher.
A book. Yes, we still have a book.
My landlord doesn't give a shit where the money comes from. There is no clout with my landlord. I just pay it. And I can do better on my own than having the clout of being broke and working at Company X. Next time you're at a convention, if they ever have it, the next time you see an up-and-coming writer, do me a favor. Look at their teeth. Nothing will break your heart to see someone who's like the hot writer of the moment. And you look at their teeth, and it is ghastly. So what is the metric of success? Is it propping up somebody else's house of IPs, or is it doing work that you're proud of and that you can stand behind? And look, I'm not gonna lie. 20 years ago, I wanted to work for Marvel. I remember very clearly taking Tony Talbert. We were working on a book called Lesson Hero, probably 2002. We're getting drunk in a bar, as we often did. And we didn't like the state of things. I said, Tony, in 6 months, you and I are gonna be working on Spider-Man. I promise you. Well, you know, it took us 2 years to do that one graphic novel. And 17 years later, I'm no closer to reinventing Spider-Man for Marvel. And honestly, that goal is gone. Like, that metric of success is not – that to me is not success. To me, success is doing stories I'm super proud of with people, with work that I'm excited about, and managing my own career. So when people say, why do you do this on your own? It's like, because I have to. Like, no one's – I'm not – I don't have the opportunities people think I have. And what can I control is this. I can control writing and publishing. That's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's a good answer, too.
No, it is a good answer. And I mean, like, there are cats in the comics field that feel the same way you do. And I think Kevin and I are along those same lines. Like, we are with a publisher for our book, but a lot of that is just for distribution purposes. Like, just to get it further out. We made Metal Shark Bro via Kickstarter, kickstarted it ourselves. Because much like you, we pitched a book that major publishers were like, no, we're good. But then we don't see this being marketable. Then we raised $25.
Yeah, that's what they said.
You know what I'm saying?
And you have to show them it is.
Yes. And part of that, too, is also like a very much like, hey, fuck off. Like, we know what we're talking about here. Like,
aren't you exhausted by asking for permission?
Yes.
What you fucking know is right. I'm not doing it anymore. I refuse.
That's awesome.
I don't have the heart. I don't have the energy for it anymore. I don't go to conventions because I can't. I'm just not good at it. I'm not good at navigating the community. I'm not good at navigating the gatekeepers. Like, I've been making comics for 17 years. I don't have a pipeline to Eric Stevenson.
But everybody, I thought everybody does.
Except for us. The three of us do not. That's
I have his email. You know, but he has to remember something about the Eric Stevensons of the world. They do love comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. But imagine how many emails they get a day.
Oh, no, totally.
Like, they are barraged. Same thing with editors. Like, they are barraged with, I would like to do this. I would like to do this. I've got a great idea. Just do it yourself and send them the book and be like, it's done. Yes or no is really my opinion.
That's awesome. Yeah. So will you do that with Nocturnal Commissions when it's all said and done, it's out, you're finished with it? Are you going to send that to somebody and go, hey, you want to put this out, or are you happy with it where it is now?
I would love to find a publishing home for it, because that would enable Greg to spend more time on it.
Okay.
It is, you guys know this, it's exhausting self-publishing a book.
Yes.
I've done it, but it is exhausting. And the next book is done, lettered, ready to go. And it's been done and ready to let it go for months. But I'm just so tired. I'm just so beat up from Nocturnal Commissions that the idea of doing another Kickstarter, you can't half-ass a Kickstarter.
No, you cannot.
You can't just throw it up and say, hey, take it or leave it. Like, you have to believe in it and be passionate and be present with that community every minute of every day for the month it's up. And it's like running a marathon. And I have everything ready to go. The page, the video, it's all there. I just won't hit click until I have the energy to be present.
What are you waiting for?
Energy. Like, you guys know, like, this place that we're in, this pandemic, this new world that we find ourselves in, this timeline. I don't know about you guys, but my energy levels, my optimism swings wildly. Some days I'm ready to conquer the world, and other days I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Drive the whole thing into the sun and let's watch it burn. And I can't bring that to a community that I'm pitching a book to.
No, I hear you.
Right.
So when I feel mentally able to climb that mountain, I will. And it will be soon.
And this is the Ghost Band book?
The Ghost Band, yeah. And, you know, I also want to support my artist. Anka Gladnick did a fantastic job on the book, and I want everyone to see how hard they work and how talented they are. That, to me, is the collaboration is always the fuel for all of this. Money comes and goes. Status comes and goes. Anyone who was hot 2 or 3 years ago, you know, like, it comes and goes. But, like, the relationships and the work will sustain you if you like it, if you're proud of it. Yeah. Oh, it's an art school answer.
Yeah, but I mean, you are a wise old man, Jason.
Fuck you both. Fuck you both right in the mouth. I'm only 19. I'm 19.
We're probably contemporaries, if I'm being honest with you. I'm 42. So.
Oh, you're an old fart.
I know.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm 45.
Okay, so yeah, so we're all contemporaries. We kind of grew up around.
You
the
look
same
younger thing. Than us. Look at this gray, yeah. man.
That's because he doesn't have kids. That's why.
I don't have any kids. Yeah, no kids. And no job. I mean, I'm really like, I have no responsibilities.
I'm just sponging off the old lady. Yeah.
I want Jason's life. That's yeah. I
got toys. I got masks. I got comic books.
I see a Thing poster in the back.
The Thing, yeah. It's a Halloween.
I can't see the Thing poster. Where is it?
It's signed by Carpenter.
Get out of here. Yeah. Oh, okay, okay.
I'm fucking jealous now.
I thought you meant like a Ben Grimm, not the...
No, okay, come on. Right. Nerd, please.
I'm just saying. I love Ben Grimm. Like, that's my dude.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
The Thing, right. John Carpenter, they live John Carpenter.
Which is kind of what we're living in right now. Like, every time I go to the grocery store, it's like fucking walking around in The Thing. Like, someone's got this virus. Someone is this demon, this thing. It's going to get me.
No one trusts anybody.
And you just walk around like, get the fuck away from me, lady. I just want to buy bread, you know?
Yeah. You have to look at their eyes. If the fire doesn't reflect in their eyes, Bob, just carry around.
It's scary, man. It's scary. It's scary. It's a scary time we're living in.
I feel like I'm a total downer. So, I teach comic books and like, actually making a syllabus. Like, I didn't think I had a process. I felt like I really bumbled through it all. But when I make a 16-week syllabus for my students, I realize I really did have a system for creating comics. And you guys know this, like, when you have valuable free time, like, you need to create. So the more time you spend, basically what I'm doing is I'm teaching my students how to go into a room and come out with an outline in like an hour. Like, mm-hmm. having you train yourself to be in this place where you can produce. Maybe you have kids, maybe you have a job, maybe you have 2 or 3 jobs. Like, if you have 45 minutes, how can you take that time and create and not just like lie down and be exhausted or play video games? You know,
which are really good options sometimes.
They are fantastic options.
Because you were a good follow on Twitter, and I saw that you wrote a novel and then you spent 6 weeks drinking and playing video games. Like, is Red that Dead true?
Is absolutely true. I play video games till like 6 in the morning till the sun comes up, and I'm like, maybe this is wrong. You know,
it's
Red Dead Redemption 2. I spent a lot of time camping with my horses, Ginger, Pepper, and Cookie.
Okay.
And we just go fishing and camping. And I avoid all the story missions because Dutch is a real piece of work. Like, my boss in the game, he's a real prick. He's going to get us all killed. So I just like to go fishing and ride my horse around. And I don't like to get pulled into robberies. I tip my hat. I say hello to everyone. And, We just
you're like, you're like the Lone Ranger of Red Dead Redemption. You're like Roy Rogers over there. Like,
I'm playing it like it's Animal Crossing. Like, I'm just getting along with everybody, collecting pelts. I'm buying a lot of outfits.
I mean, you do what you do well. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And I will say you are a good follow on Twitter. I will give you that.
Thank you.
What is your Twitter handle so people listening to this can follow you on the social media?
It's at Jason McNamara, I believe, right?
There, yeah. I believe so, too. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Jason McNamara on Twitter. I liked your tweet the other day when you said your neighbor. What happened with – now, is this a this true story? Your neighbor asked
– First off, I should tell you that my wife made me a really bougie bathroom. My wife's good at everything except picking husbands.
and comics. She can't be good at comics.
She can't be good at comics, no. Yeah. But she's a great editor because I learned grammar in a barn. So possessive pronouns, you know, that's a thing. Anyway, she could find them all. So I did, when I write scripts, I sort of like sprinkle commas throughout them, willy-nilly. We'll put a comma over here, a comma over there. She fixes all that for me. She makes me look like literate. So I have a really nice bathroom. It's hard to get out of. It's like a blue fur on the inside. It's got black pinstripes on the outside. It's got a
pinstripes?
Yes, it is something else.
It's pimping. Look at that guy.
Yeah, so I don't want to like, you know, flash my neighbors. I put that on. And I go outside and I wake up around noon or one and I go outside and I watch the dogs do their business in the yard so I know when to get it. But some days, you know, you just take the pot of coffee out there. I pour milk now in the pot and just bring the whole pot outside.
That's good.
I'm the only one who drinks it. So fucking why waste the cup, right? It
makes sense.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to like be good and finish stuff in the cupboard. And yeah, I'm out there eating breadcrumbs, just drinking my pot of coffee. And my neighbor, we cut the hedges. He can see me. He's like, hey, man. So you've been getting a lot of writing done. And I'm like, what do you fucking think, man? I'm out here. I'm like, it's one in the afternoon, and I'm just drinking coffee out of a pot, eating stale food. And yeah, man, it's going great. I wrote a young adult novel. I get off my back.
Now, tell me about your young adult novel.
So it's we're going to kickstart it, and it's I wrote a book called The Future is a Day Behind. We may have changed it. Anyway, the future is a day behind. It's about this kid. You know, you ever send a text to someone, and they're like, I didn't get it for like a day.
Yes.
Yeah. I read the opposite. This kid gets a new phone, and he starts getting texts from a day in the future. He's getting tomorrow's text today. He's like, holy shit. And then there's like a mystery. Something bad's going to happen to this girl he's got a crush on. So then he's got to try to piece all together all these texts he's getting from a day in the future.
That sounds great.
Avert tragedy. Yeah. It was supposed to be like 3,000 words, and then it's like 10,000 words now. It just became a whole book. I really got into it. And I was like, hey, I'm a writer now. I just wrote a book. Do I got to do it again? Or can I just like put my feet up and like play video games for 6 weeks?
I mean, you could, because you could have just come back at your neighbor with, fuck you, I'm camping with ginger cookie and pepper.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, man, I shot a cougar last night. The fuck did you do?
Old man.
Like, you went to your job?
Sucker.
Sucker.
So when you go into teaching your class, like, do you discuss like panel descriptions and stuff there, and like what's the advice that you give? And because a lot of people ask us, like I don't know about Bob too, like when we're at conventions, like, well, how do you start, right? And then I'm like,
okay, I'll tell you how to start.
Yeah,
you start with the germ of an idea, right? You start with three sentences, because if you can't tell a story in three sentences, 10,000 more words are not going to fucking help you. So, and I don't care, like three sentences, bring it down. First act, second act, third act. Every story is three sentences at its core. So think about this. Next time you're looking at something on Netflix, it's usually one sentence, two sentences, right? So what's the action you want people to have? So when you write like a synopsis for your book, right? You send it to an editor. It's not entertaining. It's for an editor. It's supposed to be, what's the action you want that copy to affect? So say yes to your book. When you write solicitation copy in Diamond, right? What's the action you want people to take? That is for retailers to order your book.
Yes.
So three sentences, and if you're pitching it to an editor, it doesn't matter. But those three sentences, polish those three sentences, beginning, middle, and end, until they're really, really tight. And then you can pitch it to an editor, you can pitch it to anybody, but you also there have first act, second act, third act. Take each of those sentences and turn them into a paragraph. Take that second act, turn it into two paragraphs. Now you have an outline. Once you have an outline, you do a beat sheet. What's a beat sheet? Well, I'm glad you asked. In comics, every page is your canvas. And you have to, when you're writing a comic book, you have to think about the interaction, the experience of reading a comic book, right? And what does it have? page turn. So we all experience a 3-minute song in 3 minutes, right? But how long a comic book takes you to read is dictated by your engagement with that material. So there are things that you can do to slow down the reading experience and enhance the engagement so people spend more time marinating in your work. One of those things is you take dialogue at the top of the panel and then you're crisscrossing from top to bottom so the eye is constantly moving over the artwork. Did you ever read like Garfield or something in the paper and all the words are at the top and you read all the words and then you go and read.
You look at all the artwork.
Then you have failed as a visual storyteller. You want the eye to move across.
Wait a minute, you're saying Jim Davis is a failure and his team of writers and artists? How dare you, sir?
Well, it's a very different format, but you know what I'm saying.
I know.
You want people to stay. You want people to experience your story. So you can slow it down that way, but also take the page turn into consideration, right? So pages, even to odd pages, face each other. So if you have a big reveal, you don't put it on an odd numbered page. Because when you open up a book or a magazine or anything, your eye scans all the information. This is one of those things humans do to survive. So if you have a reveal or a pacing thing, or you want to end a scene, use that page turn as a natural reset, as a pause. The reader is actually resetting when they turn that page. So you can make a reveal pop, you can transition, but keep that in mind. Also, how you start a book, I think, is something I often talk about with the kids. Like, you don't want to start with like 9 panels on page 1 because it looks like microfilm. We are transitioning. Like, we are transitioning from the real world where our optics are everywhere to the written world. So maybe 3 panels, maybe 5, maybe a splash page, because we're transitioning from real world to story world. You want that engagement. You want to pull people in. So beat sheet. You probably know how many pages you're working with, right? If you guys are doing a graphic novel, maybe it's 96 pages. If you're doing single issues, it's probably 20 to 24 pages. So you do a beat sheet. What's happening on every page? And then you can look at your story at a high level and see how it's flowing. So we did that with Nocturnal Commissions, Greg and I, and we realized that we were wrapping up the story way too early and the denouement was way too long. And you don't realize that until you do a beat sheet. Every page needs a reason to exist. So I would play with the beat sheet, the page pacing of the whole story, or at least act by act. And then from there, you write a script. And I'll tell you what not to put in a script. Travel. No one gives a fuck how people get places. I see this all the time in scripts. Like, well, then they're on the bus, and then they're on here. I'm like, you know what? They just get there. Like, no one cares because it's mundane, because we all take the bus. We all do this. We all take trains. Like, there doesn't need to be, it's not sci-fi. If it's a train on Mars, keep it. But if it's the real world, like, no one gives a shit how anyone got impacted.
So wait a minute. Yeah. So you're telling me that as a comic book writer, I don't want to write pages of some asshole schlubbing in a bus because who wants to read that?
Right? And I see that a lot. It's a rookie mistake, but it's not visually interesting. So if you have a conversation you need to get on the page, match it with visuals. So maybe you're doing a day in the life and you see this person, they can be happening asynchronously, right? Or asynchronously. Oh my God, help me out here, guys. I've been talking a lot.
Asynchronistically?
Yes, thank you.
There you go, Kev.
I'm all right sometimes.
My mouth is dry. So,
because you're yammering away like a crazy person.
It's crazy.
Look, guys, I got dressed for this.
I'm really impressed. I'm pissed off that I haven't seen your robe yet. I just want, especially now that it's been visualized to me with pinstripes and fur on the inside.
Oh, I will get it.
He's mad because he wears ascots. Yes. Get the robe for him. Yes.
We'll get it later. Finish your thing.
Yes.
Okay. So finding visual, the visual conflicts in your story. Like, these stories have to be about things going wrong. So another thing that I see in scripts is people create these characters and they love them and they want to treat them with respect and they just want to coddle these characters. And in real life, we want to be kind to one another, right?
Yes.
But stories are not realism. Fuck realism. Realism is so cheap. We can all look outside and see it. Stories are about conflict. So if you create these characters, you have to put them through hell. And they have to have conflicts between them. Even the best of friends, even you two, have conflicts between you. They don't always have to be on the surface, but they're there. Like, where we come from, socioeconomic, cultural, all these things make us a little bit different. So that's another thing I would really encourage people to do in writing scripts, is make their characters different. And the conflicts don't have to be the point of the story, but they're unique characters. Think of the Breakfast Club. Like, those are really broad character types.
Yes.
They're different.
Yes.
But together, you see the differences between them on a visual level really, really quickly.
Yes. So,
and you look at two characters and understand them from their physical grammar together. That is their facial grammar. You know, if you have two characters that are leaning in together, touching shoulders, you would assume they are close.
Yes.
If they are leaving a seat between them, they may be strangers. At a glance, can I read the physical grammar between characters and grok their relationship without a balloon saying, we're not, we just met, we're not friends. Like, that's redundant. I don't need that. Put it in the visuals. My favorite part of writing comics is taking words out of comics. I don't want to read if I open up a book and I see a ton of lettering, I know that the artist didn't trust the writer, or vice versa. The writer didn't trust the artist to tell the story visually. Yeah. That's my great joy, is when I can take stuff out and let the art breathe and tell the story. So yeah, I would really encourage people to think about the environments they're in. Is it a unique environment? Is it something we see every day? That means nothing. That's a bit of a tangent. What questions or concerns do you have about my rant?
None. It's just fun to listen to people talk comics.
Yeah.
I dig it.
Because like, it's interesting to see how different people do different things in comics. Cause like you were just saying, you know, a bunch of word balloons on the page. You read like a Bendis book and there's a lot of characters sitting places, eating things and having huge word balloon conversations. So like, you know, and you're saying, don't do that. So that's interesting. Cause I like Bendis and I think the conversations that the characters are having are interesting, but they're also Marvel characters, so they've been around forever. It's not like the same kind of thing that you're trying to get across with your indie book, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, there haven't been a lot of comic books before Bendis of like Daredevil eating lunch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it's unique, and obviously look, no one has all the answers, which is why you should have a wide swath of teachers and sources that you pull through. Right. But Bendis is Bendis because he does Bendis really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I tell stories and what works for me. It's something I'm really confident in, something I want to see. I feel like you should always write comics that you would want to discover yourself on the shelf. And I've read a lot of Bendis. I think he's clearly going to go in places, nothing against him, but I don't want to tell stories like that. I don't find that rat-a-tat-tat dialogue really pleasing to the visual eye.
All right.
I think he's done some great stuff. Hello, his Daredevil. Yeah. Awesome. Actually, his Iron Man is really underrated. I thought his Iron Man was fantastic. And his Doctor Doom as a hero?
Yes, very good.
Yes,
good.
My favorite interpretation of Doctor Doom. It breaks my heart that they've reset him back to this
yeah, film. It's dumb. But I mean, like, that's just what they have to do. It's got to go back to the status quo, and then they just kind of redo it, and then status quo, and then reset. It's stupid. I miss the old days where a new team would come on and the book would continue the numbering it had before,
yeah,
as opposed to like going, well, that's, they're done. Let's reboot this thing. Let's start it all over again. You know,
it makes me feel completely lost.
It does. Yes. And it's frustrating.
I've been reading comics for 30 years. Yeah. Why am I lost?
What's Spider-Man doing now? Like, how does that work?
It's a number one. Like, I don't even know where to go next.
Yeah, it's hard. And part of it breaks my heart as a guy who's read comics his whole life, because I don't understand Spider-Man anymore. And that was the one thing I always thought that I would get. Is Spider-Man, you know, but but I mean, you still get some good stories now and then, but what do I know?
My favorite Spider-Man was like the late 70s, early 80s, and he was like a real weirdo. He was like being Spider-Man was like making him a real fucked up person. And my favorite all-time Spider-Man moment is, it's a Peter David issue. Spider-Man is so lonely and weird in the head. He comes home and he lays out his costume. And then he opens up a soda and he puts it in front of the costume. And he sits there across from the costume with two open sodas and says, "You're my only friend." And I was like, that guy is fucking mental. He has kept secrets from people for so long. It has made him a crazy person. But once he got married and he just became something else. And it's cyclical. You know, you can't – Disney is not going to put out the weird Spider-Man who's like treating Betty Brant like an asshole.
Yeah.
Like all his like weird mental mind games with people. Like what he did to Deb Whitman. Like, I liked weird Spider-Man because when you're a kid, you're like, oh, I can grow up to be a complete fucking freak. And treat people like garbage. Yay, comics. But, yeah.
but you have to make sure you're shooting webs out of your hand before you start treating.
Right. You can do that. Yeah, you can climb walls. Right.
So if I want to get Nocturnal commissions, I can go on Indiegogo and pick up a copy of that, yes?
Yeah. And it's when right we start there. The podcast, I'll, like, give a link and stuff.
Okay. When we get started.
When we get started, yeah. Yeah. When the pre-interview is done.
And so you're at Jason McNamara, JasonMcNamara. That's you.
Sure.
That's you, Jason McNamara.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You're an interesting fellow.
Thanks.
You've clearly got your ideas about comics, and you're just doing it, dude. I mean, that's
amazing.
The hell out of that, you know?
Because Thanks, man.
And Nocturnal Commissions is amazing because I have the book. I back the Kickstarter. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think Greg and I really bring out the best in each other. We really just have a good time working together. And you have to listen to your collaborators, right? So when Greg brings something, like I change the words to try and match what he's doing, and I just try and respond back and forth, like as a conversation between him and I. And every collaboration has to be like that. You're choosing these people because they have a talent, a way of telling stories. So every collaboration feels really different because the conversation that we're having as creators is totally different.
That's awesome.
But anyway, so I'm doing another Kickstarter for Ghost Band when I don't feel so depressed. So it could be a while. But one of the tiers will be a comic class that I'll teach with four individuals. Yeah, I'll take them over 6 weeks and go through my whole spiel from taking the germ of an idea to a collaboration-ready document.
That's awesome.
We'll do beat sheets. We'll do synopsis. I'll cover solicitation copy, how to write that.
That'll be gone in the first day. I'll bet you money. Yep, I'm pretty sure.
There are so many people that want to learn how to do this.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I sort of wish, like, so when I started, when I was in that bar telling Tony in, you know, 6 months we'll be working on Spider-Man, I had no idea how comics were made. Like, you know, Spider-Man's been written a year in advance forever. Like, there's no just getting in there. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I feel like I'm really excited to teach comics and illuminate people that this is not some mysterious art. Like, anyone can do it. Comic writing is problem solving. If you can effectively problem solve, you can do anything, really. It's sort of any creative project. Someone has done it before. I'm not especially bright or intelligent, but I can do this. I promise you, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
But it's still weird. But isn't it weird, though, the way, like, people look at writers and creatives through, like, I could never do what you do. That's so difficult. And you're speaking to, like, you know, an accountant or I have a friend who's a lawyer who's like, I don't know how you do this. Like, how do you write these conversations in your head? And it's like, dude, it's because I never fucking stop talking. I just eventually write down stuff that I'm saying to myself throughout
the day. Yeah. That's what I tell them. Just talk to yourself. Yeah. I do it all day long.
Yeah.
I'm just playing with myself, talking to myself in the mirror.
I'm like, dude, you're a lawyer. Like, you went to law school and passed the bar. That's impressive. I just never shut the fuck up. Like, that's like,
but I will say, so, like, writing, anyone can write comics, but I'm not going to tell you that you can be, like, Brubaker good.
No, that's a, right? I mean, that's like.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so I'm always like, Brubaker, like, I don't know how to write like Brubaker. I'm in awe of that guy. But I can write, like, you know, okay.
Yeah, okay.
I'll be middle of the road. I'm all right.
But I mean, what's wrong with being middle of the road?
You're talking to two dudes who wrote a book about a shark guy who is the servant of Satan. So, like,
but that's your voice, right? So I feel like you talked about Bendis. Like, the Bendis is his voice uniquely, right? He gets away with it. Just because it works for him doesn't mean it will work for us. But, like, you guys have your voice, and you do your voice better than anybody else. And that's what I tell all my students is, like, every story may have been written, but it hasn't been written by you.
It's true.
Well, yeah, like, I do Bob's voice better than I do my own because I talk to him so much.
Yeah. Well, he's got a great voice. I'm not surprised. You should do Bob's voice. I wish I could do Bob's voice.
Bob's voice is easy. It's not that hard.
You boys are so sweet. That Jason McNamara. That Jason McNamara is a sweet boy. What a kind young man. I don't care if he's sitting outside drinking coffee out of a pot in his pajamas. He's a sweet fella.
Look, I set my alarm for noon these days. I am not an animal. Okay, I'm a real human being.
I mean, live your truth, dude. Live your truth.
Go ahead, like, Jason. Live your dreams. Live your dreams. See, there's my boss.
If I could say the one thing that I wish I had known when I started, and back me up on this, other people's success is not your failure.
Yes.
Yes.
And I was a petty little bitch my first couple of years in comics. I really was. And someone would get a job and you'd think, but I'm a better writer than that guy?
Yeah.
What kind of world is going on? And that's the wrong attitude, because I Bendis tells the best Bendis stories. You guys tell the best Metal Shark Bro stories. I tell the best Jason McNamara stories. Like, my voice is uniquely mine. And the only people that I'm really competing with is myself. Mm-hmm. Like,
correct. Yeah.
Are my habits productive? Am I honoring my talent or skill by working every day to making more work? Right? That's the only thing I can control. And what goes on, like, look, we all see bad movies. We all read bad books. Like, some people just get lucky. They're in the right place at the right time. Maybe they're better at networking. It's not a failure of mine that I'm not writing, like, Man-Wolf for Marvel.
Right.
It's not. Like, I wrote the best version of Nocturnal Commissions that I could write.
Now, Kevin said, I hate to work. We've kept you on for almost an hour, so I want to wrap this.
You think I have somewhere to go?
It's true. I guess you're right.
He's going to wake up tomorrow at noon. Why do you feel sorry for him?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be – I don't want to take up all of his time. That's all I'm saying. I'm trying to be a good interview here. But
You're a good man, Charlie Brown.
Now, Kevin
– we've started the interview?
No, not yet. I haven't recorded yet. This is all the pre-show shit. I'm just trying to get it all the way.
I would never say this publicly.
Okay, the Super Bowl's not ready yet.
Yeah, like, yeah.
The pre-game.
Yeah. We're still doing the background stories.
I'm only on beer number one. We're not even there yet.
So Kevin was telling me that Nocturnal Commissions started out as like three established characters. Is this true? Is this what he was saying?
It is true.
So what three were they? Like, how did you come up with this? Like,
okay, so I worked for the Golden State Warriors as a creative consultant for a couple years.
Really?
Yes, I did.
That's awesome.
It was. I only went to one game. I never met any of the players. But I knew when they were there because you would see, like, really nice cars in the lot.
Okay.
You would see, like, a Bugatti. And be like, I guess Draymond Green is here or something. But I worked on some special projects with them, and they had a relationship with Marvel.
Okay.
So I actually got to go to Marvel a couple times.
Really?
When Axel Alonso was the editor-in-chief.
Okay.
And I was mostly working with the Custom Solutions department. People that make comic books for, like, you know, if Grumman wants to do a comic, right, they go to the Custom Solutions department. So we were experimenting, maybe the Golden State Warriors do a comic book. They never did, but I thought, okay, I'm finally in the room. Once this relationship concludes, and it did, I will send them a pitch now that I know people at Marvel. Well, Axel, you know, left Marvel. He was no longer there. Pretty much, if you're an editor in comics, don't return my email because you will get fired.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how far along did this pitch get? Like, did it not?
Greg and I made a pitch for a relaunch of Night Stalkers.
Okay.
The title from the 90s, and it was going to star Morbius, Werewolf by Night, and Simon Garth Zombie. And I wrote a pitch. I wrote a year-long outline of what I would do these characters and who they would interact with. And I brought up every forgotten 70s Marvel horror character into this thing.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
And I wanted to play up the a rivalry between Man-Wolf and Werewolf by Night.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, yeah. And we had a bunch of fun stuff in there. And we sent it into, I think, the Spider-Man editor. And he was nice, and he said, I can think of like 5 times in 20 years that we've taken an outside pitch. So it's just not something that's done. Like, you just don't send Marvel unsolicited pitch.
Interesting.
And I would probably guess the other 5 came from like Mark Millar or something. Like, you know, or like J.J. Abrams kid or some shit.
Yeah. It's funny because the idea of all the 70s monsters, did you ever read Frankencastle?
Yeah.
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 Tony, did you like it?
Did you like Frankencastle?
I did.
Okay, because we're like the three people that like Frankencastle.
Tony Moore, I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Tony Moore used to have a show in Cincinnati because he got into a thing with the bigger show, so he started his own show. And he used to like go around to tables like a real showrunner and ask you, hey, are you doing okay? Which is really weird to have Tony Moore ask me if I'm doing okay. Can I get you anything? And we were just talking one day, and I told him, I said, Frankencastle was the fucking coolest Marvel shit that I ever read. And he told me that it took him like 3 years to talk Marvel into doing that.
I bet.
Maybe send him the pitch a few more times, see what happens. Maybe
no, it's too late. We changed it and made it our own. Is this better to do it our own? We don't ask permission. Like, we sent it in. You know, they may have looked at it. We don't know.
Which I liked that when you said that. He said that, and then he said, well, I didn't want to wait for permission, so I just did it.
Like, I love that. That's the best part about like it's wonderful, but it's terrible at the same time. Because if you want to get into radio, you can do a podcast to kind of scratch that itch. But not everybody should do a podcast. comics are great that way too, because it's like, I want to make a comic book. Cool, make your comic book. Sometimes it doesn't work out, which is sad.
That's the beauty of Kickstarter, right? Is like the barrier of entry is real low. So if you think about like, but it's to my benefit, right? Because I can do a professional, we can do professional products in that space, but it's open to all these voices.
Yes.
And all these people that don't have to play this game of approaching gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. And like certain publishers will keep putting out the same looking books because it's the same gatekeepers making those decisions. So I've seen like stuff come through Kickstarter that would never get initiated at a small publisher, get picked up by publishers.
Yes.
So we talk about comics does not have a dearth of middle-aged white guys. it doesn't. So what I love about Kickstarter is that it's open to anybody, and then I work with, in my students, I would say I probably had 100 students over the past two years. I would say I think three of them were like cisgendered straight white guys. Like the future of comics is really, really diverse. And what I love about Kickstarter is that, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships. We're going to see all these new creators coming through Kickstarter if they can do the basics.
Yeah.
Just produce a book on their own. Awesome. And then introduce that to an industry.
Because there are times where I'm on Kickstarter and I read a synopsis of a book and watch a video and go, how the hell did somebody not pick this up?
This is great. Yeah,
this is a great idea. There's a book out now called Glass Vipers, I think it's called. Is that is that
Glitter Vipers? Glitter Vipers.
Glitter Vipers.
Joe Glass. Joe Glass is the writer.
It's like drag queens who beat up, I don't know. It's amazing.
It sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. Sold.
It's like a grindhouse drag queen thing. And I'm looking at this going, how does this not get picked up by somebody?
Because they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
It's so foreign to them. They don't think anybody else would like it.
Doesn't that seem like such a bullshit reason? Like it's just almost laziness on someone's part going like, I don't know what to do. Yeah.
Will it make money? Like nobody wants to make bad art, but like will it make money is the first step.
Yes.
Can I sell this to my audience? So look, I love comic book stores. I would love to do more stuff through the direct market, but me in this room, I'm not set up to do that.
No.
So Kickstarter is what I can control. So I just focus on that. Yeah. That's awesome. And if somebody wants to republish it to the direct market, I'm happy to do that. I'm not saying no to money.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Trust me, my landlord wants it.
That's awesome. Well, Jason. Thank you so much.
Hey. All right, well, let me know. Are you guys ready to start?
I'm just saying it's over.
Okay,
it's over. It's over.
Yeah. It went by so quick.
I mean, we learned a lot today about each
other. Yeah, we all hate Dave Matthews, so now we're like brothers.
It's true.
Yes. We're
brothers in the struggle. But yes, you're a talented cat. Get that book, Nocturnal Commissions. It's on Indiegogo right now as we speak. Go there and get it. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll speak again soon when your new Kickstarter launches or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes. No, let's do that,
guys. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a delight. It's been a delight.
No, oh, you. It's the same. That Jason McNamara is such a nice boy.
Now you want to see the bathroom?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll hit pause.
Hang on. Hit pause.
Well, that was Jason McNamara. That was no yawner. I don't know why I yawned. I'll have to edit that out. But he was great. What a guy.
It was awesome.
Like, what a return for Word Bros.
I mean, despite the pandemic, we're here for you.
But not it's really. Good. I mean,
kind of.
This is the pandemic's been going on since, what, March? This is July. This is our first episode. So we're kind of slacking. But whatever. We got shit to do, man.
We're depressed as shit. What are you talking about?
We got shit to do. So yeah, man, Jason McNamara, Nocturnal Commissions is on Indiegogo right now. Check that out and buy that book and make that man happy. What a guy.
And follow him on Twitter and wait for his new Kickstarter to come out, the Ghost Band.
Yep, there you go. So thank you very much for listening. We will talk to you guys next week because we have another guest, Mario. How do you pronounce Mario?
Candelaria.
Man, there you go. Mario Candelaria. So we're going to talk to Mario. So that'll be a lot of fun. Thank you so much for listening and we'll be back.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.